I think it's very important to understand that we all don't have the same experiences. We're not coming from the same places. For example, it was very painful for me as a father sometimes to hear your own podcast earlier on, for example, sharing about what social media did to you and to your generation. I was born in communism. Okay, get over it, right? I mean, this has been a long time ago. Going to Christian school. I mean, no, this is... You wouldn't have been able to go really to school. You are born in the context of a danger. You don't work on Sabbath, we don't care about these things. So by itself, it puts you in a place where ministry is defined in a completely different way. I will forever be grateful to God for this moment. Ministry is not about, again, what we do. You can go and kill yourself about doing certain things. And this is not it.
Welcome to the first episode of Ministry Reimagined. This is a podcast where we look for perspectives, not because each of them are the right answer, but because they help us to take a step back and to look into the heart of ministry. We're powered by Virtual Staff Network, a startup committed to empowering ministry leaders so that their ministry dreams become a reality. This was just the beginning of a very big conversation where we talked about the relationship between ministry and technology and how those two don't have to be separate. We talked about growing up in communism and that how affected the growth of his faith. This was just, again, the surface of the conversation. This is just the beginning. Hello, welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Good, I'm glad. I'm excited. Are you excited?
Woohoo!
This is an exciting episode because the whole purpose of this podcast is to reimagine and innovate what ministry is today and what it has been, and to dive deeper into people's stories. And as much as I know about yours, we're related. This is my father. I don't think we dive deeper enough into the why. Like, I know the story and technically what you've done in your life, at least most of it, but we don't go deeper into why you even felt called to do it. So this is exciting.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're hitting something very important and big here. Our stories, in some ways, they're nothing so extraordinary or special to make a big deal out of it. In the same time, it's exactly these personal nuances, these personal experiences that makes us experience or to understand what we mean under, let's say, ministry or technology or things like this, because they don't mean the same to us. And it's all based on our experiences. So yeah, this is really, really good thing to dive in.
Perfect. And we'll dive deeper into all of it. But first, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do?
Oh, for sure. But again, let me just get a step back and say how thankful, happy I am that somehow God found a way in the hearts of my kids, in you, with this, and Jordi and Evelyn in her own ministry. God find a space for a desire to open up and to just try to serve in one way or another, and to even be open to have this conversation, this discussion. I mean, this for me, it's preciousness, priceless. And yes, I wanted to start with this because there is nothing that can make me happier or more fulfilling. I mean, obviously, we are not great specialists, or we're not going to come here with PhD type of conclusions or things out of this. But I believe that the honest opening, right, to a conversation, to just say, God, we maybe know some stuff, maybe there is so much we don't know, and especially in the times that we live in, there are so many things we have to probably reimagine or re-understand or some way, and just humbly step back and just say, can we talk about that? Can we just have a conversation? I mean, for me, this is priceless, and I'm very thankful to be part of this starting up. So, okay, now, if I have to go back in memory lane, I mean, if I give you the brief version, it would be something like, I was born and raised in Bulgaria. I lived for about 5 years in Morocco in my childhood. In my teens, they were back in Bulgaria. There's lots of things we did in the church. It was a great experience. Then I get married. I moved to Canada about 25 years ago. And then I've been working in the tech industry, in the business sector or the church, back and forth a few times. And now I am back working for the church. I'm working for the North American division in the retirement department, trying to help with my skills and what God gave me, some ways to help the people that have dedicated their life serving the church and working for in their retirements and things like this, working with data and technology. So briefly, this is what it is, but it doesn't give much, right, a perspective. I'm also passionate about ministry and technology, right, and these things. And now, I think what it's really make, why would I probably bother you with the time trying to go back in my personal experience? It will be only with one reason. It will be because I think over there, in my personal experiences, there are certain things that have shaped how I see ministry, how I see the benefit of technology. And to be honest, when I sit back and sometimes and I compare this to other people, and sometimes to my own kids, to your own experiences, and I feel sometimes I'm so passionate about that. You know, I really see. And from the other side, I see, well, I'm mostly scared about that, right? Or I did not have this. It wasn't the same to me. This may be a confusion sometimes. Sometimes it can be painful, right? It's in many these ways. But I think it's very important to understand that we all don't have the same experiences. We're not coming from the same places. And if we really want to really understand and see what God wants us to be able to offer or to open up for Him to do in the times that we live in, I think, yes, we need to spend time and just reflect and share and learn from each other, right? For example, it was very painful for me as a father sometimes to hear your own podcast earlier on, for example, sharing about what social media did to you and to your generation, for example, in your most vulnerable age and time in your life. While for me, if I have to talk about social media in my age about this, it will be all about, man, this is exciting. Let's go and do certain things, right? And we can use most of this for... So it's never one picture, right? It's not one way. And this is why I believe, yes, I appreciate this opportunity. I appreciate this thing to try to do these two things that actually we have above our heads here, right? One is to take a step back. I think we need to take a step back and just see. Because ministry, again, it's not something that we just do. And I want to go deeper a little bit about this, banging from that. But it's something that God does through us, right? And the whole thing is, and if we want to really open and if we really want to understand what is meaningful, what is purposeful, what really God needs, we do need to stop a little bit and stop pretending that we have the answers or we have the experience or we have these other things. And I think the other part that really is important is, yes, let's make it a bit personal. Let's make it personal because this is, at the end of the day, what God has done in our lives, in the small things, what has affected our personal lives in our small experiences. This is what matters. Mm-hmm. And I want to understand more. I mean, are we really curious about other people? Are we really curious about their experiences? Are we at the place where we think, no, I mean, I know how it is, right? And I'm convinced, and you have it wrong. Mm-hmm. And I have it right. And we have to go do it more this way or the other way around, whatever it is. So anyway.
Perfect. Yeah, I think, as you said, defining what we're even talking about in a conversation, because as you said, people's experiences are different and they change the definition of something like ministry based off of their experience. And so as a communications major, that's something that we really focus a lot about, is by defining what we're talking about to make sure that it's the same conversation. So, but going back, I think it's important to, it sounds like your story for ministry started from very young. Do you remember, is there a moment that sparked your passion for ministry? Where did it come from?
You know, so this is the curious, interesting part. I mean, as I mentioned, I was born in communism. Now, this can be boring and sometimes for many people, okay, get over it, right? I mean, this has been a long time ago. I think what though something an experience like this gives you, it's you're born into the context of a ministry because you are born in the context of a danger. You are questioned. Your faith, if you are to be who you are, to be behind your faith, it's not something that you can just do by inertia, right? It's not something, well, I was born in the faith, I was doing these things, so yes, I went to Christian school. I mean, no, this is, you wouldn't have been able to go really to school, writing many of those things. You were ridiculed because of your faith. There are so many things that happen because of the context where you are born. You are under constant attack. Mm-hmm. You have to be bold, right? So in these circumstances, it puts you in a place where ministry is defined in a completely different way than it's defined like when you were born, right, mm-hmm. in this place. And to be honest, I was born in the mid-70s, which was not the darkest areas of the communism, right? And by the time I really grew up, I technically had to face very little of the real persecutions, even though I was aware from many of them and experienced parts of them, but not as much as my older friends had to probably go through certain things, or our parents and things like this. But just the context, again, I want to mention this. I think it plays a big role. It's one thing when you are, your concerns and your fears are, well, am I performing good enough in school? Am I going to probably be successful in life? These are very good and important questions. But if it's like, you're stupid, right, even to believe nonsense in school, nobody else believes that. Or you have to make a stance, well, you don't work on Sabbath, we don't care about these things. So then you're going to be, you cannot finish your school, you're going to be expelled from school. I wasn't expelled from school, but many of my friends were. They couldn't even finish education. I mean, is this a choice that you make, not have chance of life in life or anything like this, or even have to be in the army and things like this, and then be put in the pressure as well to be put in military prison because, you know, for example, you don't do certain things on Sabbath or you don't do certain other things. So these are some very, very special decisions that one has to make, right? And living in this context, it brings you, I have to stand. I have to be convinced in what I do. It has to be really meaningful and important for me to be able to do this, to make this decision. So this by itself changes a lot. Mm. This, for example, determined some of the things as well that the church was doing as ministry as well. So for example, it was mandatory military service. Every young man at the age of 18 was supposed to go and serve in the military. And these were very, very difficult times for these people. So one of the things that we did as a church, we went and visit. Mm. So you had this sense of community of people who really wanted to take care of each other. So ministry was really serving and taking care of each other. Work with kids and young people was officially forbidden. You had no right to do this type of things. So how do you really take care of your kids? How you really not indoctrinate them, what it was kind of blamed to be, but how do you really share your values? How do you share what really God means and God brings to their life, the difference that he makes? Why is it worth suffering in some of those things because of what he offers? Transmitting these things and giving it to the next generation, it's a very special type of ministry too that came with this. So this brought a lot of things, right? Just in the context, being born into these times. Another thing that really kind of marked my development in the teaching ministry is at the age of 7 or 8, we moved to Morocco, where my dad was serving went to work as a mathematician, as a professor. Mm-hmm. And the family had the chance to go. There was an exchange program between Bulgaria and Morocco. I mean, very, very unique things that during communism you're not allowed to travel. And this was a very unique opportunity. And the exposure that we got there really marked big parts of my life with this, opening contacts that were not available to many people in the country at the time. Exposures, but even just being able to live in a Muslim country and seeing as well what... how you can get certain freedoms now. We could have these freedoms, but the native people from Morocco, they couldn't have, for example. And how as well the state was forbidding work with Muslims. But having these encounters as well with Muslim people and then the church and us, this brought a completely different aspect of how I saw ministry as well at this time. So, there are so many things around this that formed who I am, just opening these perspectives. I saw my dad at this time spending a lot of time reading, for example. And because there is nothing much that I was able to do in Morocco, it wasn't like we had a big church community at this time. It was more in isolation. And this is the part I forgot to mention. My early childhood at the church was really marked with experiences in the church as the community. So when our parents, for example, Friday night, they were gathering to have choir practice or other things, there were special things that we, the kids, were doing together. So this was some of our most precious times. I think that there were a group of families and that were getting together and that they were organizing things for the kids, right, for us to do. And we really enjoyed this time. So all my time, all my community, everything that I had back in Bulgaria was really in a very close community in the church, spending in the church. Now, when we lived in Morocco, this was not there. And I had some Bulgarian friends, some other friends, but it was a very different life, more isolated type of a thing. And then that's why I had opportunity maybe just to start more reading on my own. I was reading things that I couldn't understand much. But we had exposure to some theological books and other things that the church had there before, but because the church was closed, we had the books mostly at the house where we lived. So I had access to lots of literature that I really couldn't understand, but I got the exposure, right, to read theology and, some really deep books. And just the opportunity to just read, even though they didn't make much sense to me, I think gave me a different sense of perspective. It somehow created a love for reading and for studying, which later on determined a lot of the things that we are doing as well in our lives. But so this was another just aspect, right, of the experience. Then when we came back to Bulgaria in the late 80s, right, I was now just getting into my early teens. I was 12, 13, this is where we're getting in. One of the things that really now I had back a community, and I had this desire to just kind of internally of me, again, the church was all I had. God, the things, this was the thing that was really most important to me. And maybe, again, this was shaped by the times and the places where I lived. And we couldn't just sit and do nothing. We just couldn't just sit and be spectators in the church. And I guess this is one of the main things that I have in me still to today. I cannot sit just in a church and just say, I'm a Christian, I'm just coming there. For me, the sense of have purpose, to be able to do something, to make a difference, it's entrenched deeply, right, through all these things that we had. And it's interesting that at the age of 12, 13, the church at the time, again, legally, we didn't have any programs for young people and for kids or for any of these things, but there was definitely no structured programs like we have here, Pathfinders or whatever, and things like that. But we created our own. This one, I think, me with some of my friends at the time and with the support of our parents at the time, we created our own organization. We get our own club, in a sense. And we started just going. One thing is meeting together, talking together, planning together, doing programs for the church, in the church. Then starting to go to smaller churches around the big city to kind of bring more hope and thing to the isolated people, mostly older people in community that are around, having group of young people coming in and singing together, preaching together, doing some of those things were really big change for these remote communities around the big cities. And it was a very special experience for us as a kids too, being able to see what it brings in the spiritual experience of older people or other people, just to be able to see young people and kids around them and sharing and singing. And we had tons of support because obviously we couldn't drive ourselves, right, and do all these things. So we are very thankful for the parents that were around us. But this support that we got and this opportunity to have the initiative, right, to create things, to do things, marked a lot of what, again, ministry for me meant at this age. And then when the communism fell, this was very interesting time again, because now there was thirst for knowledge. There was big evangelistic series to happen. And guess what? Our small organization and the club and the things that we had, we were the front runners in this, because it was not only our passion, but we were kind of prepared for this type of things, because we were already a group, we already had some structure inside, we already had initiatives to do so. You needed us to prepare an evangelistic series somewhere in another city. We are traveling, we are going, we are planning, we are distributing flyers, we are going overnights to put, to make advertisements and all the time that needed to be done. We were going, this was our passion. You needed small groups to do, have discussion groups around these things. We were there. We were part of this whole thing. So again, church was so vibrant and living for us, and ministry, it was real. You see how pretty much the church was transforming, the community was transforming, and things like this. And I can spend hours into this, but I'll try to be shorter. Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
But so a little bit later in this, as things were going, obviously we became mostly of the leaders and all things that we organized in the church all around the country. But there was one void that has been always there, right? I mean, now the church had better programs and things organized for the kids, for the younger children. Young people, normally now we were getting together, and you can, as long as you, I mean, the moment you can get more independence a little bit, there was a vibrant life in the church for young people as well, trying to do many things. But there was this age group between, let's say, just 10, 11, up to 16, for example, that was really neglected in the church. We were just out of this age. We didn't experience this because it's exactly the time when we had our own organization. I mean, my generation and, again, my group around us where I lived. But for the generations after us and the things that we are seeing, it was really painful. This was the people that were just normally sitting outside the doors of the church during the church. They were just getting there to run around, fool around, nothing really interesting for them there around this thing. And around this time, there was the Euro-African division, now the Inter-European division. Youth leader came to the country, and now because I lived in Morocco, I spoke French. I was the translator pretty much to all of these events, from French to Bulgarians. So I was very involved in all of these trainings and things that were happening. But they came and they introduced to us the Pathfinder program, but the European version, which is first in a different age group. It's from 12 to 16 rather than what is currently here in the high school, or 10 to 14. And the core thing that we just saw there, it was the opportunity. It was exactly what kind of the thing that we experienced. It was a program that was allowing kids at this age to organize self-organizing groups and us to be supporters, right, in the group. The DAOs, the trainer, the animators, the thing leading in this program, trying to be the one that empowers them, right, in the group. And have them exactly experience ministry this way. Then there was, of course, the nature side of it, the survivor nature of it, but the experience to live in a group and all these type of things. It really brought to us, it was a bit of a mixed reaction, because in the first you saw these uniforms and the scarves, which for many of us at the time were repulsing. This was the communist programs that we were used to, forced to do in school. So there was immediately a reaction against these things in Bulgaria, and the kind of a little bit association with military, and I think it was really bad, the first reaction. But when you look at it and the things, what it actually meant, right, an opportunity, we embraced it. We had to do certain things a bit different, for example, and this is where I became probably a bit of the leader in this program in Bulgaria. We translated all the things from French because, again, of the French things, and I was kind of elected to be at the national level to coordinate this program in the Bulgarian Union, working with amazing people in the union team there. But this was, again, a ministry at a different level. I didn't work for the church officially. I was not employed. But it was always kind of, I was the church. Right? You were working in the church. That's why for me, another big part about ministry and the confusion a little bit, my experience in North America, it's the differentiation between lay people and employees, right? And when you employ the church, especially at the time, there was not even such a much a big of a difference. You didn't think about it this way. It was like all our own experiences through this. So this shaped a lot again. As you can see, one of the parts that I can say about ministries, ministry was our life. Ministry was what lay people were doing. Ministry was something that was coming out of a need for months. We were never sitting down and just say, okay, what can we do to make things more interesting or whatever. It was mostly coming again, evolving through needs, through problems that needs to be solved, through development in certain things, to empowering. So it's kind of God was leading through this whole thing. That's why I think one of my main understanding, let's say, if I can take away of this section of my experience, was ministry is never and should never be something that you try to invent right on your own. It's something that has to come from God. It has to be empowered from God. It has to be something, a result coming through you, through the community around you, but led, really shaped by God. And this is where, kind of for me, in my journey, going still in the memory lane, things have a dramatic change in a sense that, well, first I got married, and then, well, this by itself didn't change my passion for ministry or anything. Actually, even with our first daughter, Evelyn, when she was born, we were there at the Pathfinders Camp or East First with her. She was just a few weeks old when we were running and doing and participating in events and doing things. But then we moved to Canada, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, now this is a much more dramatic change in how you experience certain things. First, because now you have some additional problems to deal with. How do you survive? How do you make a living? What is your church community around this now? What is your ministry? I mean, my ministry at the time was the church and everything else. I mean, the young community at a national level, kind of the thing. Because again, we were a big family, even from the small villages to the bigger cities to the whole country. It was one community as a whole. And here the experience now had to reshape. I had to rediscover everything, right? Even my church community, my church family, it was not the same anymore, many other things, so forth. But, oh, sorry, I have to come back. I have to come back to Bulgaria for one very main thing. I mean, because I talk about ministry, but let's talk about technology a little bit with this, because this is where is the other side of my life, right? Technology has been my passion. But again, I cannot say that it's from childhood, because when I was a child, technology was pretty much audio tapes, right? Or in electricity, things that we don't consider so much like a technology today, right? Or say, oh, old stuff. But my dad, when we came back from Bulgaria, he worked in the University of Sofia. There was their software provisioning, I think, department. He worked there. So through him, I got exposed first to computers, well, through playing games, seeing some games. But you can see that I remember the first old computers and playing the snake game or the Pong, right, ball and things like this. But so this was my exposure. I mean, who doesn't like technology this way? As a kid, you like games, right?
Yeah,
going through
sure.
these things. But then he brought, my dad bought sort of our first computer. It was mostly a keyboard. It wasn't so much of a computer than a keyboard. It doesn't have a monitor. You can plug it to your TV at the time. It didn't have floppy disk or anything like this. I mean, you don't know even what floppy disk is. It didn't have a hard drive. It didn't have a hard memory, but you could use an audio tape. I mean, this was a really interesting experience, things to learn. But this is from where I think, okay, my curiosity and my thing to play with this, copying programs from a magazine, typing them, trying to see what they mean, all things started coming up. And my grandfather saw this, and then I wanted, when it came time to high school, I wanted to go to a computer high school, very specialized high school for this, and he supported me by buying my first computer, and things from there happened. But so there was this one part that I was curious about these things and I liked them. On the other side, the church was using technology all the time. So let me take a step back and go back to communism. Sorry, I just remembering some of those things. But you take today, I mean, even talking about Sabbath school today, right? I mean, how many people really love Sabbath school? I mean, how many young people really love even Sabbath school? For us, this was one of the most precious time. It was so precious because this was the time when really the church and the people, it's not when you're preached to, it's a time where you can study and you can really participate, where really things become real for you. But we couldn't print books. The church didn't have stuff even to, we're not authorized to have them, the quarterly even material printed. So what the church was doing from time to time is, I remember these times, it was on Saturday afternoon, we all come to church, and one person that has one printed material from the front is going to read it, and we are all going to write it. So, I mean, this was, I don't know, for me this was a precious experience, because it showed as well how much people appreciated having access to certain things that today we don't. And then when actually we had access to duplicate and print certain things, it was a big deal, right? It was a big deal to be able to now hold your own, being able to, you appreciated it more. Well, with time, I guess, this devaluated as well. But, and then the use of the computers, I think, during the evangelistic series that we have, they had real practical use about those things. It wasn't just something that I'm using for myself, just for entertainment. It was things that we were using to just do things that were helping during the evangelistic series. And maybe the one that probably shaped me as well, even the most, was the Net series. I don't know, probably, I mean, you don't remember them. You were not born at the time. But the Net 95 to Net 99 series, and then there was the Net 2000 that was more of a regional type of initiatives. This really shaped a lot, I believe, in my personal perception about how technology integrates with ministry. I mean, just imagine, just think about that. Using satellites, I mean, today you have internet. At the time, internet was just coming in. I mean, internet was the one thing that was making noise over the phone lines, and you know that when you have internet at the time, you didn't have a phone because it was using the phone line, and it was... And most of the people didn't even know what it was. They didn't like it. It was interesting time. Now today, communication is a very different place. But the church at the time was able to use satellites and being able to host evangelistic meetings here in the U.S. in some big churches organized and have all around the world people putting satellite dishes on their roofs, on the church's roofs, and then have this thing projected and being part live of the program, sometimes recorded and put live or live, but just as live as possible, right, during this time. So this was a really interesting time because it showed how technology really made a difference. I mean, imagine how revolutionary this was. I mean, today probably you cannot even imagine it. But this was an amazing thing. And it had a deep effect even in my life, not just, again, because of the technology so much, is the technology was the mean through which we were able to experience something like God's Spirit, the Holy Spirit moving in people's hearts and things. I mean, the transformation you were able to see as a movement, right, moving throughout the world, it was something I've never experienced before, and maybe I've never experienced after from this time, right? It's when the church was one, experiencing the same message and same thing throughout the world. And probably the most impactful to me was the Net 98 series, the one that really spoke mostly to me and helped me as well in my spiritual growth and experience and things like this. Then it was Regards 2000 to Mil. This was the French one, actually, because again, that's now the originals, more originals. That was from Collange. It was very different, but as well very spiritually profound in the way it affected me. So, but yes, this is where when I look now at technology and I look at ministry, I cannot separate these two things, right? Because I see it as a mean to provide access to something that is really important. So just, again, think about it. The group of people that we were trying to write down Sabbath school lessons that we didn't have access to the moment going where we were listening real time sometimes to experiences and sermons and God's speaking throughout the world at the same time, right? From different places. I mean, and then when the internet started coming from there, right? I mean, this empowered me. I mean, from this, I kind of, for me, I couldn't ever separate them. So I started my own website at the time. This was in the 1990s, right? And 2000, I had my first church website at the time. We called it Usmivka in Bulgarian, but it was smile.net. people didn't have yet computers at home, not at home, but they were going to internet cafes or internet clubs where they were able to have access to computers and internet. And they were going, and this was the opportunity to chat with other friends from the church, from different places around the country, and have these conversations. It was a very interesting social phenomenon, right? Even to have this way of to communicate and then have access to, I think some of the things we had at the time were spiritual greeting cards that were not available in many other places. We had some actually little games as well. We had spiritual greetings. We had a discussion forums, of course, the live chat and a few things like that. So just this opened, I think, again, a different type of access to build on spiritual experiences. This was the time when there was no YouTube yet. There was no live video. There was no real-time things like this. This was, well, I guess this technology was starting to emerge, but it was nothing that was really used. And there was flash communication server, I remember. I mean, who remembers Flash yet? Still, right, at this time. But it was a technology at the time that allowed us to do real-time interactions in synchronously, even chat and, let's say, presentations and things like this, audio, to all be synchronized in the same time. So this gave us the opportunity to create a first live international Bulgarian Youth Congress kind of the thing we did. It was an adventure, right, in a thing. It wasn't really well advertised or popularized, whatever, but we had over 100 and about 200 people, maybe even close to participating in this event at the time. It gave us a big sense, again, of what it means to be an engaged community together, even when distances were still a big deal, right, through this time. And from there on, as we moved in here now here in Canada, we were very active. Again, you cannot remove from me the things, the desire to do things, right? So we wanted to do things, but so we wanted to create a website for the church. But first, the church that we went was not very convinced that we really need a website. What is the website even for, right? What is it going to help with? This was a big church, right, initially. So we had to start getting these conversations about, again, overcoming challenges, right, in the church when people don't really understand technology, don't really like change in certain things, don't see the benefit that it can bring. And we are from the place where we experienced, man, this brought me close to my community. It had such a big effect on my heart. And many people here on this side that were, well, that is it really worth it? What does it mean? It doesn't really work, and all these type of things. So again, these dynamics were really interesting from the time. So especially for me, it was a big deal because I'm not someone who can sit on the and just wait on these things. So it was an interesting experience. But so we were doing things. So we were, with technology allowing more opportunities, we started doing a website. Of course, the church opened up. The church appreciated what was being offered. We became the first church, pretty much, I believe, in Canada to broadcast live there. The sermons and things. The pastor that we got at the time was really open and supportive about that. So this allowed us and me to really to be involved, to be able to do things, to be really engaged in the church, to continue the sense of ministry probably that I had. But this is where I want to kind of get another nuance through these things. It became a lot about doing, around pushing, about overcoming maybe challenges. But somehow through this whole thing is something was missing. There was something I felt was missing in my personal spiritual experience. And I believe this is one of the things that many people experience at some point when you can continue start doing ministry and doing things that are valuable if you look at them from certain perspective. And in the same time, to be empty. I was seeing how we are doing things. I was going with my cameras, even trying to get good content, trying to create good things, trying to put them in. There was no YouTube at the time. I create my own kind of a streaming channel for this at the time. Anyway, it was impressive in a sense and very empty in the same way. And this is a part of my personal spiritual experience when I went through doing stuff, doing things, being tired of really doing things, trying to good stuff, and feeling exhausted. And it's not just exhaustion because of physical exhaustion, it's because, does it really matter? Does it make a difference? Does it really bring something? And I felt how I was hungry. I felt hungry even though I was involved in churches doing things. And for a few years since I came, maybe this was because of the change of environment, maybe because it was my personal, again, season and many other things. But it felt hungry spiritually. And I couldn't find satisfaction. And I thought that satisfaction, I don't know where it's going to come from, until this was a very interesting and powerful experience for me. When I was there with my camera trying to do my ministry, just being there faithfully, trying to record an event that was happening at my other church at this time, that was having at the foot of the cross kind of a series before Easter. And they had Pastor Fire Rabin doing the presentation. And Pastor Fire Rabin was, I mean, a very powerful figure, I think, in the Canadian ministry. It was Canadian It Is Written. But he was a very odd person. I honestly didn't expect to receive much. What can he tell me? I have heard it all. I have been, right? And I was kind of oversatisfied intellectually, spiritually, probably. I didn't expect to get anything and I was still hungry. I wasn't there with any expectations. I was just there with my camera trying to do something, get some content for my channel. And I remember sitting there through these few days, from Wednesday through Saturday through Sunday, recording and just being part of what he was presenting. And it was slowly, right, from him talking night after night, not saying anything new, not presenting anything new, but just lifting up Jesus, just lifting up what Jesus did, how it led to his sacrifice, how it came out through his through the resurrection, and just sharing this message, how this is the only thing that really brings meaning and change people's lives. How there was nothing else, no other efforts, no other intellectual or big sophisticated thing that you can do that can change people's lives. The one thing that really can impact and change a person's life is what Jesus did for us. And just sitting there again and trying to get this sink into me was a life-changing experience. It made me realize how ministry is not about, again, what we do. You can go and kill yourself about doing certain things. And this is not it. This is not it. You cannot change a person's life. You cannot change a person's opinion with anything that you can do. It's just what Jesus can do through you. And this was a testimony that it was not just an intellectual realization. This was the testimony that was transpiring through what Pastor Fire Robin was presenting for me at this time. I'm sorry for getting so emotional. This wasn't planned.
No, good. That's okay.
But I will forever be grateful to God for this moment, because it changed my perspective. I kind of realize how vain everything else is. How vain is your personal qualifications or your even personal drive or many other things. It's just this dedication to share, to be an instrument, to testify to what God is doing through you. And I witnessed it. I don't know how many people know Pastor Fire Rabin, probably not many, but I'm sure many in Canada at least, but at this stage of his life, he was in constant pain. His legs, I mean, he was on a stretcher. He couldn't stand. He was literally lifted up before the presentations to stand on this pulpit for him to speak and then put in a wheelchair. And this was extremely painful. Why would someone want to do that? Why wouldn't he just get some peace, right? And just rest or do something? And I remember him just saying, I can't. I mean, I have this thing from inside of me. I cannot just go and even enjoy my retirement or do some of those things. I have this thing that I need to share. And it's just to testify, to present God. And it, again, it wasn't a big, sophisticated, complex or whatever thing. It was just a simple message of Jesus and how the transformation that he does in your life, how he loved you, and how this is all that you need. So this, for me, was a really, really big turning point in my life, because in many times, if it's without this, I would probably have quit ministry or something very long time ago. It doesn't make sense, you know. Why would you push through certain things? Why would you want to go through the challenges or pain around this? There are just two options. Why would you do that? Either you are really, it's your career, right? And you are selfish and you really want to build this. And many times I think we are at risk to do something like this when we do ministry. We risk to make it about us and to make it like, no, this is my opportunity, right? To shine, to be there, to be upfront, to do whatever and this and that. And on the other side is this, man, I just cannot sit down when I know what God has put in me. It's not that I want it. It's not that actually sometimes I don't really want it. But there is this stink fire from inside of me just saying, people need this. People need to hear about God. People need. And I think this is what, again, for me, it's one of the crucial things when we talk about ministry. And we have to question ourselves. I have found myself in this situation. I just decided at this point over there, God, please don't allow me to even be allowed to speak, be invited to speak or do anything if it will be just to put my own thoughts, my own agendas or my own discoveries or my own passions, right, things. If it's not about bringing you up, if it's not about you bringing you close to a person, trying you to reach out and to fill this void that we have and that we need, please don't allow me. It's useless. It's painful. I don't want it. It does nothing. It can just get me in a very, very different place. So, anyway, I've been talking a lot and there are many things I would like to say, but does it make sense to you in this whole thing? I think this is the point that I wanted to bring, at least as we speak, talk about ministry. I highly appreciate this opportunity again to take a step back, because I think if we don't do that, we risk a lot to make it just about us, about us. And realizing this, how vain this whole thing is, how actually bad it can become if we remove God from it, if it's not about him actually doing it and making this decision. God, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to do ministry. I don't want to do activities in the church. I don't want to be doing any of those things. Please help us not to do this type of things in our churches if you are not there, if it's not to lift you up, if it's not to make you present in the thing, to make you feel the void that we all have and that we all experience.
I don't know what to ask after that, to be honest.
Well, I do believe, again, that we need these conversations. So I hope that, again, with this podcast that you are starting, getting personal in people's initiatives, right? What made someone to really want to minister or to do something. You know, at some points I believed, man, my experience is so unique. I am so in my things, and right, God led me through many things, and in many sense it is. But then I start listening to other people, and they start opening about why they do certain things, how God spoke to them, and said, man, I'm not unique at all. At the end of the day, it's all about, I mean, we all, so many of us, we have this deep need inside of us that doesn't find purpose, doesn't find satisfaction, doesn't find realization unless you put it into service for God, right? Into this thing. And I'm so glad, I'm so full of hope that God is preparing certain things that he has to do in our time now through people that are opening and that are having experiences like this, because if it's just to us, I mean, we're doomed in many of those things. But I see how God, deep God is in many people's lives this way. So exploring some of these experiences, some of these testimonies, some of these desires, and many of them, they're entangled with struggles. They're not success stories, right, in the way, oh, we went and we made this thing and 100 people came and we did whatever and we have baptisms. I think most of our stories are stories of struggles. How do you even find for yourself right purpose in your own journey? How do you find really be useful to the friends around you without being artificially just there present and testifying about things that even you don't believe in and you don't understand, right, in many of those things? I believe these experiences, this honesty, this humbleness, this thing stepping back and just letting God taking charge and being up, this is what brings me hope in these times. And maybe we were too, at some point, we were too full of knowing how we should do things and stuff like this. But I believe now, as the challenges of the time proves how little we know, how little prepared we are, this is where I think we can allow more God to step in and really to lead into this. So I really am curious. I'm hopeful. I want to see what people share, right? And I think this curiosity to learn more about each other is something, it's something tremendous that we can bring. So this is about ministry. If you want to about technology, I mean, I'm all for that.
That's funny. That's good. Thank you. I appreciate your vulnerability. I think, like you've said in your story, there's been a lot of, you know, changes in technology since your time in ministry and time in even everywhere in the world. There's technology, and you saw the internet coming up and all that stuff. How, with the way that technology is advancing now with AI and all this stuff, how should we be looking at it? Is it something we should be scared of, or should we be welcoming it?
Well, it's a big question. It's a big question. And I mean, from one side, I think I'm tempted to go and just to tell you a lot of the things that I believe in, how strongly I believe how technologies can make a big difference. And I want, and I will say a few things. In the same time, I want to recognize as well that, again, our experiences bring us from different perspectives. So even just talking about ministry, and I can tell you how passionate I am about ministry, how important this is in my life, and how I don't see anything else meaningful. I don't see meaning in my life to be successful, of bringing a big enterprise or many other things like this. I mean, this may be the way to serve and to do certain things, to fulfill certain ministry or mission type of things, but by itself, all these things don't matter unless they have this other part of it. And in the same time, I can see people, for example, even some people from my age, from my generation, from my close friends, that can just say, well, I was burned by the church. I was burned by the ministry type of orientation of the church, by the zeal, let's say, in many people in the church. I was burned because my parents were so much into ministry that they neglected me, right, in many of those things and many other ways. So, and I cannot say what is right, that one is right and the other is wrong. These are all legitimate experiences. And I can understand people's fear in talking about even, let's just say, technology in this thing. Because technology can, and I mean, just taking an example that I mentioned earlier with you, your experience with social media, with your age and the harm that it created at this most vulnerable time of your life with the closest friends around you and the environment that you were. Just saying for me, no, social media is a great thing, right? I mean, most people today are going to say social media is the evil. Now, is it the evil? Is it the great thing? I think it's both, right? In both of these things. But it's our experiences shape how we feel about certain things. But even in this, I really hope that we can step back, again, take a step back and not just react based on feelings, not just react based on some of our experiences. They're important. We need to understand them. We need to deal with them. And in the same time, I think we need to be as well logical and just to say, am I going to say that technology that saves lives is a bad thing? That technology that can provide a different and new opportunity of quality of life for someone, it will be a bad thing? Just imagine. Take, for example, the technology companies themselves. This was, for me, it was a big thing. Right? There was time, especially at the beginning, that it was mostly about rivalry. Microsoft against Apple, against this and against that. And it still is, right? Windows, Linux, macOS, and many other things about, if you just talk about computers and this type of things. And we have definitely fan base, we definitely have preferences and what to use and this and that. And it was in the marketing, in everywhere. You remember at the time, I'm a PC, I'm a Mac and whatever, all these type of things. Right. But many people started actually even have very negative feelings against some of the companies that were had the strong technology opinions, like Microsoft, for example. Disclaimer, I'm kind of a Microsoft guy. I mean, I don't work for Microsoft. I'm not sponsored by Microsoft. I have my personal bias and preference about products. But the thing about this was when maybe it was because of Microsoft realized that, okay, we lost the phone competition. Windows Phone, I loved Windows Phones. But anyway, they lost this battle that was not there. So in many of those things, I think companies realized one after the other at some point, just saying, you know what? It's not about competing and just eating each other or beating each other. It's about more about complementing each other. And at the end, it's not about us. It's not about so much the software and the product that we create in itself. It's not about making us look great. It should be about the creators, about the consumers, about the people that we empower. If they can do great things with this is what matters. And I think this is the main shift that I believe is happening and has happened in many of the companies that produce. Obviously, they're driven by profits and the thing they have to make. They have to defend their products and to make them the reason to be there. But the shift, it's not about the product when you realize this. It's about the user. It's about the person. Are we empowering people to have better quality of life with technology? Are we empowering people to be able to do more things, to be productive or to achieve things that they couldn't without this? I believe this is what matters. And sometimes that's even what Microsoft said. Well, okay, we're not going to have our own phone, but we can build products for the phones that people are using, right? We can build our lines of things around. And I believe this shift that many of them have realized, many of us haven't realized yet, right? Mm-hmm. We're still maybe battling or having our other things about this. But I think it's important. I think it's very important to realize it's not about the tool. It's about what you can do with the tool. And us and the technologist, and I'm a developer, I'm a person that builds tools. It's not about the tool that I can build as well. It's about, can I build the tool that can really make your life easier? Mm-hmm. And if you look about ministry and technology in these ways, do we have ways? Can we see ways where we are empowered to do things that we are not able to do before? And now I can understand many people talking about, let's say, even artificial intelligence. I mean, we don't know yet even what exactly it means. We don't know how this can impact our culture, our economy, our many other things. We don't know. And there are very legitimate fears around this. In the same time, is it opening doors and things for things that can really change our quality of how we do things? Are there really opportunities that can change how we... how we serve each other, right? And how we do certain things. I think this is an incredible opportunity. And if we allow our prejudices to take aside and for us to have an honest time with ourselves, well, obviously inviting God and having him to lead this whole thing, to help us to understand, to help us, allow him to help us, to guide us in this process. But I believe that they are incredible, incredible opportunities that are opening with technology. So, yeah, technology can be a pain. It can hurt. It depends on many other things. It can be used for bad stuff, definitely. But it opens opportunities that we didn't have before. So just imagine, are we going to give up internet now? Even though all the things that it has done, the opportunity for us to communicate with people and friends all around the globe, being able to do things that we've never able to do before, right? Just the world that we live in, the way we function, we're not going back. Now, was it the best or not? This can be a completely different story. But so I do believe that there is an incredible opportunity here.
That's awesome. I think... you know, you've experienced a lot from some lessons you've learned, you've experienced some challenges, some really good successes. What would you say to someone that's just stepping into ministry? What would you hope that they hold on to that maybe you didn't have when you started?
Interesting, good question. My personal experience, unfortunately, probably one of the painful parts of my experience, and this I can take the last, 20 some years since I am here in North America, mm-hmm. when I kind of lost my natural community of people and friends as we moved in here, was the loneliness in ministry a little mm-hmm. bit. And I don't know if this is because sometimes ministry can become a personal thing, and if it's yours technically and it's not the passion of someone else, it's become kind of your own project type of thing. And in some way, I think this is natural. In some ways, I think this is a good check for ourselves, right? Am I, again, doing this for the right reason? Is it really me? Is it just me, or is it really God behind it? But again, this can be, it's not easy to find people to really help you in what you do in your passions. Especially, I try to build computer games. I try to create so many other projects. I've done some really good projects. And I think I believe I brought them to a good place and a good level where I can bring them by myself. But the thing is, by the time this is remain your own project, it will be very difficult. So for someone who wants to get into ministry, I think one of the main thing is loneliness, right? And mm-hmm. if it's just yours, how are you really going to find support? So I think for the first part is there is an opportunity to really be self-critical and just to say again, is it selfish? Is it about me? Am I willing to open source it in a way, to make it so it's not about me, it's about other people? You know, one thing I experienced working through the church, for the church and outside of the church and other things, it's sometimes we kind of fear that somebody is going to take our project. This is my ministry, right? This is what I'm doing. So, and if you try to do the same thing or do something, it's like a competition and it's something wrong and we're trying to compete with each other. This is very unhealthy. And I think this was the part where I never understood, because from my perspective, it's great. If you want to do that, I was doing this, but if you like it and if you can do it better than me or anything, great. There are so many things I can do around it to complement it or to do something else. There is no lack of things that we need to do. Mm-hmm. So again, thinking about competition, I think it's a very bad thing. If we can bring our ideas, our desire for ministry, our initiatives together to the open and not to have ownership around any of them, right? I think this will be one of my main advice. When you come into ministry, do it for the right reason. Don't make it about yourself. Don't make it about your things. If you think that it is something that God put in you, put it out there. And if God finds other people to jump in and to build it up around you, embrace it. If there are other people that can do something things better than you, embrace it. Mm-hmm. Find your place around these things. But in another part that now I think technology, especially with the AI that brings opportunities, is you can do so much more now than you ever used to do before. You can have now these AI agents that you have been talking a little bit, and some of those things that, can take away the roles of entire teams. And this is not in a bad sense, like it's going to make you relevant and take your job away. It's in a way that it can, you can get the help that you need, that you couldn't find elsewhere. So for example, if you lack a strategist, if you lack someone that can provide you ideas, that can do research for you, if you lack someone that can do the communication part for you, just sending and coordinating your teams and doing the stuff, or even planning your social media, doing the logistics around what you want to achieve, you have now an amazing opportunity with technology. I think this is worth exploring. I think it's just starting to open up a space with tremendous things that can be done. But I think keeping the right mindset, the right culture for me, is where it's important. It's an exciting time to live in if you want to build ministry. If it's amazingly exciting time if you want to build ministry. Now, if you want to build about yourself, I think you can get empowered to do great things for yourself in a ministry, but I highly discourage this. I would like to recommend first and to put again, is I believe this time it will be, these times that we're living in, it will be a very great test for ourselves. Why are we into ministry? We can embrace technology and make it so we can do more and do it our own way, not caring about other people, not caring about even communities and things like this or feedbacks, because now we can with many of those things. We can be against technology just because it diminishes my role and it diminishes my input and it's not how I like doing things. I believe in all of this, it's very important to take this step back and just to say, well, is it about me? Am I becoming an obstacle for the ministry, for what God needs to do because of my personal take about technology or one way or another or the other, right about that? Or is it really, can I, God, please don't allow me to do anything with this ministry if it's about me, right? Can I say that? Can I step back and just say, God, help me to be an instrument and just to do the role that you have provided for me in this thing. It can be a role that can be leading it. It can be one that be supporting it. It can be the one that probably just had to bring it up and someone else pick it up from there, right? I don't know. But I think the main thing around this is have our hearts at the right place. Really spend this time with God where we really want to make it to be his ministry, not ours. And then allow technology to be used in the way that can help. Not making it a self-purposely thing, but use it for the good that it can create. I don't know if this helps and answers.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for sharing your story. It was really interesting to hear more about it and to dive deeper.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, this is a topic really dear at my heart. Mm. I believe that God is about to do great things. And what it we can provide is humility, but also our personal openness. I really hope that many more people are going to join your podcast and you'll be able to reach and get testimonies, right, about from people that for their stories, again, with ministry, their struggles, because I think this is a very important thing, maybe some of their successes, but also how God is moving people's hearts for service, what service means, the perspectives that we have, how we understand things. I really want to encourage everyone to be more curious, everyone to be more open from other people, to build, so we can build more understanding, right, and sensitivity about each other. And I can't wait. I really can't wait to hear more.
Me too. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for watching this episode. If you made it this far, you either fell asleep or you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. I love the reminder that ministry isn't about us and it shouldn't be about us or about what we do, but it's about what God can do through us and how technology could play a role in all of that. But this is just the surface of a very big conversation that we're going to continue to have every 2 weeks with other ministry leaders to get different perspectives and insights. If you enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to support this podcast so that we can keep making future episodes by subscribing, leaving a review, commenting, or following our social medias, which are linked in our bio or found right here. We also encourage you to learn more about Virtual Staff Network at virtualstaffnetwork.com. Thank you again for watching, and we'll see you next time.